Good evening. I'm Kevin Bayouk. I'm with the San Francisco Botanical Garden Permaculture Institute, and welcome to the latest installment of the Summer Solutionary Series. We have one more to go this summer, and this is the penultimate expression of all the amazing solutions that are out there that we'd love to share with you. Thank you for coming. Tonight we have the most amazing guest. He's a former professional snowboarder, former business world consultant, also present permaculture designer extraordinaire, educator, sharer, vision holder, visionary. He's the founder and current executive director of the Daily Axe organization. He was formerly a member still of the Dutch Bill Creek Watershed.
Formerly.
Is holding down the Daily Axe world in Petaluma, where he's turned a small apartment and tiny backyard space into urban container garden. Has launched a number of programs that have been creating enormous attention towards sustainable solutions, things that really inspire and give us hope for the world we want to see. And that these solutions are rippling out that we don't hear about. In fact, he is, as I like to refer to him, Mr. Ripples himself. I'd love it if we could give a warm welcome to a good friend, Trathan Heckman.
Thanks. So I'd love to first just go around and maybe in a few words get a sense of who's here. You know, maybe just say your name and something that really lights you up in just a word or two. And then where you're at in the background of understanding of it. It could be permaculture, sustainability, ecological design, just to get a sense of where people are at. That's a great start. And to your Jeremy Narby question, I'm not an expert on ayahuasca, but you know, I think it's a lot about getting your paradigm cracked open and just tapping into Pachamama, the Tao, whatever you'd want to call it, just presence and oneness. And to me, that's what permaculture is. And so it's a little different, but this is about just shifting your paradigm. It's the same things are going on the street when you walk out the door. But when you start to have those eco-design eyes about the wisdom and the beauty and the limits of natural systems, you know, and that 4 billion years of evolutionary wisdom that we can always relate with, you just have a different lens. You're still walking down the same street, but the way you sense and connect with yourself and the environment and dissolve those barriers. So I think it's the practice of daily acts and sustainability, permaculture, ecological design. It's totally about that. You know, along those lines, it's really awesome to get to hear what you guys are all up to and your interests. And what I'm lit on is the fact that we just got to start the day with a sustainability tour, highlighting, you know, these brilliant ecological visionaries, that the people amongst us, the solutionaries who are doing it, and to build community with people of all spaces and shapes. Some people brand new to it, some people really expert, but folks just showing up and wanting to learn and make a difference. And then I got to go to a Pachamama Alliance Awakening the Dreamer Symposium that I got to take part in Healdsburg, which I highly recommend. Same thing about connecting environmental sustainability, spiritual sustainability, social justice. You know, awakening the dreamer and dreaming a new dream. And so that, you know, a whole group of people there who are all phases and rocking it. And then get to come here tonight and just hear what you guys are up to and your interests. And, you know, we're facing an unreal set of challenges. And the more you know about where things are at, I think it requires even so much more courage for all of us to still show up. And I feel like that's the one of the most core things that I think is vital in our time, is to how do we learn to just really understand the hurt, the rapidly declining ecosystems, the energy descent future, the loss of species, the melting ice caps, just all of it, but to create the presence and space around that to hold the beauty and the hurt, and audaciously move from inspired daily actions. Because when we could do that, people just don't even know, almost know what to do with it. They're so blown away. They don't, and even if their mind's closing off on a sensory level, when they just feel that from us, you know, that is powerful. And so tonight, we'll talk about definitely some permaculture principles and sustainability framework, and then some of the ways I've applied it at two properties and in our organization, and just for my personal ecology practice, which I think is the most vital piece, our personal practice of how we apply this to not one aspect of our lives, not our garden or our job, but to the whole of our lives, you know, that unified whole. And so what it is for me, and what the only thing that I'd love to have walk away from tonight, all of us in some way, is that when I first started learning about permaculture, the first time I went to the Permaculture Institute in Northern California, Penny Livingston, who's one of the main teachers locally and internationally, just a powerhouse of permaculture and eco-design knowledge. And I went to the site, I didn't know a lot about plants, and I, you know, had some ecological awareness, definitely knew about the problems in the world. And it just, the place just floods into your senses. And I didn't really know a lot of what was going on, people were talking, but there was just such a lush, vibrant fecundity in this place that you didn't have to necessarily understand how all the systems were functioning or know the Latin or know all the medicinal uses or the, you know, beneficial aspects. But it just kind of flooded in through your pores. And you're like, wow, I'm seriously deficient in this. This is a missing nutrient in my life, and I'm going to do what it takes to get more of it in there. There's whole long design courses, and even in a two-week design course, you're still just, you're getting this first kind of lens into, oh, wow, this is a whole new world. The certification doesn't make any of us experts. It's more like lifelong students. And so that feel is just more what I feel is important to cultivate. Because our imagination, our emotions are the most powerful things we have as physical creatures. And scientists now know what indigenous people have always known, that we're shaped by our perception and our environment. And so, you know, part of it is like waking up to the very real challenges we have to face and getting a solid understanding of where we're at as a species and a planet, needing an accurate map. And so there's relating with that, but we still choose how we relate with that. We still have say in the neuropeptides that are pumping through our system to create the emotions we feel. And so part of it, you know, working with that larger aspect of how we're shaped, but then being shaped by each other. When we're walking down the street, how are we relating with that dandelion, that pioneer species, early succession, just breaking through the concrete? Do we just walk over and not notice, or do we see the power and the vitality in that? And then a larger pattern recognition of what that plant's role is in the natural succession of life. And so just how we relate with each other. And so I really just try and cultivate. Permaculture is an amazing way for me to do that. But that feel I experienced at the Permaculture Institute, surround myself with people who do that. And that's what we do a lot in our work in our organization, is just highlight who are the brilliant set of cultural reference points that we want as our compass going forward. And so I'd like to just pull back and see, since I know there's some permaculture people here, just to throw out what you think permaculture is. It can, even if you don't know, like in a word or two, you could just popcorn, what permaculture is to you. Because it's a lot of different things. It's an ecological design science, but it's much more than that. And so maybe if Kevin or John or Kat or whoever, I throw out a word about.
I think back to when we got the opportunity to spend, Trith and I had an opportunity to spend 4 days with David Holmgren, one of the co-inventors of the term permaculture. And in an intimate moment, he said, permaculture to him, the essence of it is reclaiming our place as nature, reducing the separation. And so I definitely see it as a design system based on ecological principles. But it's, for me, it's this reconnection to home, to a place of integral wholeness. And it's the only word that captures that for me. But it's something like, it's a word that of something I've always known, or I've been looking for the term kind of fell into place, something that I always kind of felt.
Anybody else want to throw out any thoughts? You don't have to be an expert either, you know, just what you think it might be. That's a great description of it. The community, to me, is really one of the biggest pieces. Like, even today, going to 3 different events, and, you know, there's so much going on in the world anyways, there's a lot for me to even try and organize in my brain you know, organizing an event in the morning and then participating in an event to speak at in the afternoon, then coming here tonight, all things I love doing, but what gives us order? And, you know, it's not just we're moving into this vital age, a real need for regeneration and restoration, but it's just not just the restoring, it's the restoring. I feel that's the most critical part. What's the story we tell about our lives, our place at this great turning on the planet, when we take things from destructive, monoculture, dominator sort of cultural story to regenerative earth story in healthy, reverent relation with all of life? And so, you know, permaculture is a great, it's a sort of a coat rack to be able to hang your understanding on. And it starts out as, you know, it's founded in these core ethical principles: care of earth, care of people, share the surplus. And that doesn't necessarily tell us how to do it, right? It's like these broad, okay, care, that makes sense. And then from there, it proliferates out to a set of design principles. And it comes from, you know, the founders looking at system sciences, ecological design, and then the indigenous people of the world who, not that they were all perfect, but they knew how to live in place. They didn't really have subsidized air, energy, water. And so the ethical principles, and then from there, you know, we have these design principles. Things like Mo mentioned one. And there's not really a definitive set. I have a set of 12 here, but it's really, they're just tools to help us think creatively and think critically. And so you'll see, here's 12 great design principles by the co-founder, David Holmgren. And then in different courses, you get different principles. So you get different variations. Use small and slow solutions. Simple daily actions. We got to start working and understanding the macro, but we'd get overwhelmed and inundated if we're just always trying to operate on that level and you don't even know where to turn. You look at some of them and you're like, even the solutions could be too much. Like, holy smokes, I just listened to this brilliant person speak, which often happens in permaculture design course. You're like, I could never do that. I don't know what they're doing. Where would I even begin? Small and slow solutions to start and act. But really, I think it's the story. For me, the people, the cats and Kevins and all the people we just get to know, new and old, that are my new reference points. You hear what they're excited about and what their challenges are. And then when you blend that with ethical principles and then design principles, and then from there, you come out into this series of strategies. A strategy applied in Africa is going to be different than a strategy applied here, probably. But the principle, you know, the principles are universal. So like a principle of catch and store energy, you know, sunshine in a bottle. That's a principle. It could be applied if I publish a journal or I'm a teacher. You carry your notebook. You catch and store your ideas. Water. We can't live without water, so you want to catch the water coming off your roof. But there's a diversity of ways of doing that. You could catch it in a container. You could catch it in the soil by different strategies you'd embody. And that's the beauty of permaculture, is that anywhere you go on the planet, the principles are pretty sound and they apply. And so it's just a toolkit you can internalize. It's that compass. It's not locked into a particular coordinate, but it's a guide. And then from there, you know, the permaculture and the people and the two-week design course, or depending on how it's done, you know, you learn a lot about a lot of the different strategies. There's some core strategies used within that. So that's really the main thing to me is, like, I like the sentence or the question, what are the organizing principles of your day, your week, your world? Well, that's a lot to process. It kind of makes sense and it feels right, but I couldn't point to principles that I organize my life around. But permaculture, I couldn't say, you know, my whole world comes from permaculture, but it is the sort of coat rack that I put a lot of things in. Because there's a lot of other great types of ecological design, biomimicry, there's other lenses of doing this, but when you start to get the framework and you start to, through time, we start to develop the critical thought and the eyes of how to sense and connect with life in an ecologically sane way, it's the compass that we're growing. And so some of how I've been able to apply permaculture is on a 45-degree redwood hillside that was badly eroded and degraded, putting in hundreds of species or varieties of food and medicinal plants. You know, and some of it, I thought it made sense to design in a meander. It felt good to design in a pattern. Of course, once I started studying patterns and understanding, you know, the science and mathematics of meanders and why all the rivers of the earth meander the same as the wrinkles in our gut and the sutures in our brain space, you know, that the pattern is the same here in the watersheds of the earth and up here. But intuitively, a lot of times we know what to do the right thing, you know, and then sometimes we get the coat rack to hang it on so we have a better understanding of how things fit together and what's the story that we tell, the holistic story. In such a fragmented society, our story and getting a story that makes sense is, I think, one of the biggest things. It's not to say that everything's perfect. You know, there's plenty of issues, but still we can have a story that gives us hope and makes us feel whole. And so permaculture as a way to, you know, just to better understand some things that we already intuitively know how to do. Most people know that, you know, producing less waste is a good thing, but it's also producing no waste is an ecological imperative. There's probably people who hear of compost bins or worm compost bins. We know it makes sense to take that and then to transform life's waste into fertile soil and then to maybe take it a step further and catch the beautiful liquid that drips out the bottom and to make a microbial rich tea out of this waste and stack functions, increase the number of products we produce. And so a lot of us are already doing these things, but you know, again, permaculture helps us get that story or that framework of where to hang it. And so we applied first permaculture to a 45 degree redwood hillside, and then my wife and I moved to a small in-town rental unit in Petaluma, where suddenly I went from looking up this beautiful watershed of redwoods to looking at this brown fence 6 feet from my face. And I was just like, oh man. Our efforts in daily acts are pretty big. We do a lot on a very small amount of energy. And I need kind of generate an internal rhythm and juice that the redwoods really created. And so part of the personal permaculture is like, holy smokes, how do I adapt and put out what I've been putting out when I'm looking at a brown fence instead of redwoods? You know, permaculture, the problem is the solution. And the beauty of it's not necessarily having the pristine place out in the woods. It's built for this time when things are degraded and challenging. You know, transformation and just working magic with whatever you have. There's a principle to use and value the marginal. The dark spaces, the spaces under your stairs that medicinal flowers and plants could be pumping out of your stairs. And so now in our small place, again, it's just a rental in a year, we've put in, again, a few hundred varieties of food and medicinal plants. We have just in an area from me to you, 7 months ago, there was nothing. Now there's 65 containers of perennialized polyculture delight of blueberries and gooseberries and currants and blackberries and asparagus. And there's strawberries growing out of the blueberries. And then there's a fig with a mustard vining up. And as those seeds go to seed to create the next cycle's dream, then you get the peas vining up your dying mustard. And there's broken concrete in a pile somewhere, so then you make meandering garden beds out of that. And well, what about that foot-wide space between the street and the sidewalk? And there's this patch of recycled fence. So, you know what, I'm going to vine peas and beans up the telephone pole for multiple functions because it gives me hope, and I need to be looking at things that are lush and vibrant when you're also looking at collapsing ecosystems or near there. It stokes people who are walking by. You're building relationships. Edge. You know, there's this edge, the pathway, education opportunity, food, beauty, soul food, does so many things. It, you know, so just doing more, whether it's a container or a patch of grass or whatever, just cultivating more of that lushness in each aspect of our lives. And so we just got bees. I'm really excited. We have this teeny little spot between the fence. You know, each aspect, you don't have to do it all, but each small act that you weave in, like I'm pretty familiar with fruiting and flowering sequences and things, but now that we have bees and I'm aware that there's not a lot of flowers to pollinate to feed them in this time frame, August, I'm suddenly aware of the privet that I thought was pretty worthless and now it's just packed with bees. I'm like, ooh, that's beneficial. And maybe the self-sowing annual, the mustard that I would normally cut back, I'm like, I see those mustard flowers. Ooh, the bees need some food. And so little by little, we take that next step. And you weave in another element, and every once in a while you have this community of people to go to. You have a permaculture design manual, some knowledge from a course, some notes, just being with each other. And we're going to do some movement tonight, sort of the permaculture of the body, because I think a lot of it is just opening up your pores and just soaking it in, not expecting it's all going to stick here, but just soaking it in and being like, I don't even remember what that gal or that guy said, but I know it makes me want to create more richness in the world. And in my life. Another aspect of how I get to apply permaculture, I'm fortunate enough, is, and it goes back to the people, is I'm involved in the Belize Agroforestry Research Center, which is a really amazing, essentially, permaculture jungle farm in southern Belize. And to get to go there, and again, just like at Penny's Permaculture Institute, just to soak in the diversity of a rainforest, what that feels like coming into your pores. And again, more importantly, the people, I got involved because the first guy I really heard about permaculture from, this guy Mark Cohen, who's one of the directors of it, I was sitting in his talk and I was studying medicinal plants. I had some of the pieces, but I kind of understood what he was saying, but I don't know if I wasn't ready, or it just seemed like a lot. I just wasn't really connecting with it. It was kind of like, I don't know if I'm ready to hold that many pieces. But this guy, he just had this mad spark in his eyes. And I had a connection with him. I'm like, it was him. You know, it was really him. Again, the people. Like, I don't know what he's doing. Yeah, permaculture, ecological systems. But I could feel just a little bit of the lens through how he sensed and connected with life. And it was way different than what you see walking down the street. Way different than what you get from a book. And so one of my, you know, strongest as my personal permaculture design is, again, having more of those people in those places, those sentences, how we tell the story of our day, week, and month in my life. And so it's just this, you come together and you meet some rad people, and then they're helping you shape your story. And it gives you hope when you visualize that there's pockets like this all over the planet who are cultivating personal and planetary richness and resiliency to adapt and spring back for our most pressing challenges. And that's such a vital food source, because you find when people feel that, we get to feel that, we can take on more of the hurt. And, you know, tying into that, so Daily Axe is a solution-based membership organization. It's another area that I feel fortunate enough to get to apply permaculture. And, you know, essentially we're about creating a healthy and a just and a reverent human culture. Just one act at a time. And we seek to inspire and empower and educate people, and to do this through positive example, focusing on the organic fair trade shoes and clothes and, you know, just all the great people around us, telling their stories and letting them tell their stories. Darwin's positive deviance. You look around, people are barely treading water, and the solutioneers are challenged too, but somehow they're still thriving. The organic farm we're at today that's using veggie oil powered tractors and has a veggie oil station with ethanol for people and a straw bale cooler, and he's got all kinds of challenges and he's still thriving somehow. And so just to surround ourselves with that, and again soak it into our pores, and as a design element to promote that, none of us have to know all the answers to start building relationships with these people, and to just look around our corner and pull together a tour one day and be like, you know what, there's three or four amazing restaurants, businesses, backyards in my neighborhood. I want to get to know them. So, you know, Ripples Journal is one of our core programs, which I'll give copies of everybody here tonight, and Sustainability Tours is one of our core programs. And so, as a design element to, you know, small amount of input for large amount of change, the amount of calories I invest into something versus the amount of calories that come out of it, the energy is, you link together four amazing sites in a day, and you don't have to be the organic farmer or the amazing green builder, but you're bringing together a group of people that is just has this feeling of, wow, thank you for what you're doing. So they're getting inspired, empowering everyday citizens. The farmer or the green builder is sitting there, the ecological designer, and suddenly they have 30, 40, 50 people saying, thank you so much for what you do. And they're getting pushed farther. It's also, you know, the design is about linking together disparate pieces and how we design our lives. And so it's linking together our communities as well. And so in 4 years, 4.5 years, through people like Kevin and John showed up and Kat, Daily Axe is a volunteer-run organization. And we about 100 people a year volunteer. And we've had people put in probably 25,000 plus hours over the last 4.5 years. And we've participated, spoke, taught at, or organize about 120 events and put out 13 publications. And it's really, you can't say it's all permaculture, ecological design, but it's the same conversation. It's just suddenly having the people in our lives that go, wow, thank you for what you do. Thank you for this amazing work. And then learning a little bit along the way and slowly building our cultural story. And so those are sort of some of the ways that I'm able to apply permaculture. And then the personal design element, as far as movement, and I really think that's the hardest one that often isn't addressed, is how do we move through our day and how do we design our life, just to even start designing our life. Right now, people are so barely treading water and out of control trying to pay the bills and just keep up and not be overwhelmed by what our government's doing, that how do we actually start taking back our power and to consciously design how energy flows in and out of our lives, the perception, how our perception and environment shape us. And so even if it's 1 in 1,000, identifying the people in this room and the people like us at whatever skill level is really critical. And again, permaculture is a great framework to help us do that. And so I'm just going to run through, we're going to do movement in a few minutes, but just briefly touch on some of these 12 ecological design principles. So again, you know, the ethic principles, care of people, care of planet, share the surplus. And then the design principles. First one, observe and interact. And so we're all doing it right now. You walk down the street, you just start asking questions and you start looking for something different. Me just even trying to get a sense of who's here versus just starting to talk at you guys. Usually there's brilliant people. Actually, everybody's brilliant amongst us, you know. And so figuring out, like, what are the resources in this room? It's always kind of a mutual relation. But so observing and interacting, and that's that small step, not being so overwhelmed by it all. Interact. You know, that we dive in and just start doing something, even if you don't have all the answers. Next one is capturing and storing energy. You know, and so as we move through our life, sunshine in a bottle, capturing our ideas in our notebooks. If we read an amazing article that we feel we want to keep reminded of, highlighting key points that we personally need that moment in time. Putting a water catchment system on our house. We just, you know, one of the main issues on the planet is our depleting aquifers, our dying rivers, our disappearing lakes. Same thing in Petaluma where I live. We're about to run out of water, even they're saying in the newspaper. And so it wasn't even a huge thing. Just in this median, this wide, in front of our house, 20 feet long this last winter, I dug these little catchment ponds, kind of like what permaculture folks call a swale, just catching the water from the sidewalk to the median, and then also thinking up watershed, the house next to us, they have a drain spout, runs, goes over the sidewalk, usually goes down the curb, concentrates, takes the oil, and instead of the water recharging into our aquifer, so we have water for us and for future generations, it's polluting the river, creating runoff, creates all these problems. We just dug these little berms and sunk like 1,000 gallons of water in a median this wide. You know, just, and then now there's comfrey and all these amazing medicinal plants growing in it as well. So recharging the groundwater and just relating with how energy flows and mitigating some of the water off our neighbor's house. There's a sidewalk break, and so we filled up one catchment little pond and learned and made some little boundaries so then it flows across the sidewalk and then splits and fills down the other side. And you look down your sidewalks just to have the lens to start to, oh, wow, 1,000 gallons there, 1,000, 1,000, 1,000, 1,000, just on a block around my house. Not a big part of the landscape. Like, this is just the little median. You know, there's 20,000 gallons mitigated and sank. That I know of. I know this because I poured gallons of water in there to measure it. There's more than that that's really recharging because, you know, another strategy we use is put heavy mulch, which then increases the soil's capacity to retain water and using compost. But you just start to, you know, if you don't get it all, you just start kind of waking up and you're looking around and you're relating. Suddenly you're relating with your median and where your water is going. How often do we just walk by our median or even the sidewalk that pervious surfaces don't work in nature, you know, on the ground or up here. And so catching and storing energy, there's lots of great ways to do it. Produce a yield. That's an important one that our society is really good at. Producing a yield without the ethical principles is a dangerous thing, right? We're destroying the planet because people are producing a yield really well, but without the care of earth, care of people, share the surplus. In the sustainability permaculture side, we produce a great yield of amazing inspiration and information that, but you know what, I've been volunteering 5 to 7 days a week for 3 years, and we got to change that. And I look around a lot of other people. So us learning how to produce the financial yield while doing this great work in the world. But producing a yield is important in our gardens, in our lives. How are we catching and storing energy in our landscape, growing our food, producing honey, pollination, but also all the world that's swirling by us? What are we able to grab onto as we move through any day and to have that grow us stronger? Apply self-regulation and accept feedback. Really important one. We're not accepting feedback that well from the planet. And so feedback loops with each other, anything we do, just thinking in terms of feedback loops is really vital. We were talking about today on the way down, priests have that little screen on it. There's a feedback loop to know how you're using energy. There's people who get more interactive with permaculture. You're more tinkering with your life. You're looking at how much electricity you use, and you're starting to go, wow, I'm producing how much wastewater a month? And so it's sort of like sailing your ship. It's sailing your life. And so, you know, creating feedback loops in our lives that challenge us. I got bees. I'm not a pro beekeeper. Now all of a sudden I'm like, whoa, I got to learn how to work with bees. And I did a little bit more prep work than that, but still, it's like you got to learn. And, you know, you go through fears of, like, what if they all sting me at once? Or, you know, and so pushing ourselves to take those steps, but, you know, to accept feedback. It's not just growing a lush, vibrant garden. Harvesting your garden is a whole different thing. You know, suddenly it's growing, and all of a sudden it's like, but we're still buying our broccoli from the store, shard, and like, oh, but that's in our garden. You know, so then there's that whole loop of, well, now I got to plan the time. I got to design the time into my life of how to use the things I produce. And so just thinking in terms of those feedback loops is vital. Produce no waste. That's an amazing one. It, you know, worm bins, compost bins, bulk packaging, reduce, reuse. I want to install a wonderful gray water system at some point, which, you know, gray water is like your sink water and your shower water and that. But until then, I have this little 2.5-gallon pot that sits under my faucet, and I have 50 little meditative trips out to the garden a month. You know, what's that, half an hour, an episode of Friends or whatever else people are watching? Instead, you get a chance to connect. And you're not just carrying the water out. Then you're in your garden. You're checking the temperature. You're seeing if the Nicotiana is blooming and it smells at night, and you're relating again. And 100 gallons of water, instead of going down the pipe and your resources leaving your slice of life, at least just the satisfaction, the personal satisfaction that, okay, my resources are no longer leaving the property. Instead of recycling your cardboard, using it to build soil and to mulch out weeds and then to put cardboard over. Heck, your socks, I can't throw anything away. My wife gets sick of seeing me in ragged clothes. And so, you know, the problem is the solution. I'm like, all right, well, then I'm going to put them in my worm bin and bury them in my garden. And so you put your old T-shirt under your garden path. It's carbon. Let it return to the soil and build fertility. And just as a principle to start, you know, we live in a world where you could get 80-cent bananas and $4 a pound local apples, or 80 cent a pound. So things don't add up when something travels 2,000 miles away, global warming, oil use. But so sometimes it's just us being like, you know what? Sure, this is going to cost me a little bit more, but I'm just going to do it because you're working with the principles. And that's a ridiculously huge power. Using and valuing renewable resources and services. They show a horse. Cuba, when they ran, you know, when the oil tap got turned off, there, you can't run the tractors without oil and without being able to get steel from somewhere. Moving into an energy descent world, they're using draft animals now a lot of the time. And so it's the draft animals, it's the bees, but it's also the clothesline. You're not degrading the sun by drying your clothes and having this nice kind of sun-quenched shirt you wear. You know, so all the, you know, people use clotheslines, we know this, but again, starting to get that framework. Oh yeah, what's the principle that holds that up? So the first six in this system are sort of at that detail level. And then I'll just go through, and the next six are macro. So the first six are in looking out, and then the next six are out looking in. Designing from pattern to detail. You know, just like understanding that how the rivers of the earth flow. And the branching pattern, same thing in the rivers of the earth, in the veins in our body, in the tree branches and the tree roots. And also in our daily lives, you know, our own emotional patterns. Recognize where do we fall short? Where does a limiting belief come in and keep us from doing? Sure, you take the design course, you got the book on your shelf, but what's keeping us from applying it, from living it? Whether we've studied it or not, whether you walk out of here and could be a greater permaculturist than someone who took a 2-week design course, if you could just somehow push through the internal blocks just to make it happen. And so a big thing that I think is important is just using a lot of these principles as we piece them together. What's the design of our life? Are your magazines piling up? What are you not getting to? What is limiting you? Where are we getting stuck as individuals and as a collective? You know, so there's the design of your garden and using billions of years of evolutionary wisdom to do that. Herb spirals in your garden and, layered planting on multiple layers rather than just corn. Why not have the three sisters, which indigenous people have always done? You have your peas or beans vining up your corn stalk, and then you have your squash, which is shading the soil, preventing as much evapotranspiration in that. And they're working together. Instead, you got three plants in the same space. And so recognizing those patterns of nature doesn't grow just one thing. Nature doesn't leave bare soil. Nature doesn't grow in rows. Nature doesn't build in right angles. You look at trees. And so just thinking in terms as a general principle in designing from patterns. And there's a small core set of patterns which, you know, 6 or 8 patterns which really shape a large amount of the universe we know. The close packing pattern in a beehive or on a cob of corn. The spirals that are in our blood and bones and pine cones and the intrinsic worth of all water spirals. It's the most common pattern. All things that flow and grow in nature spiral. You know, so close packing pattern, spiral, branching pattern. And so there's this small, the first time I found out about patterns, I was like, are you kidding? You feel like it's Indiana Jones stuff. You feel like you should have had to go through some epic adventure to tap into the keys to the universe, and you don't. It's like you could learn, you could get a really good head start in a half a day course. A few hours to a day, and you're like, whoa, that right there, you know, getting the permaculture design manual, reading the patterns chapter, listening to someone do a sacred geometry talk, that alone, just to see how energy moves through the landscape, is amazing. And then our adaptive ability. So there's a pattern in nature, you think about now, time of desecration, a lot of hurt, that when there's a big disturbance pattern in nature, it accumulates energy. It finds a spot to gather energy. It pulls its resources in. And so it'll pull into a place, and a pioneer species will stick in there and take root. And then other plants are able to take root, and it starts catching water and holding more water and creating more life to grow. And so gravity and slope are some of the guiding forces in that to allow these relationships to build. And so how do we creatively adapt and respond to that? So for Daily Acts Organization, one of our core principles is that creativity and hope in our heart space function like gravity and slope in life's landscape. They pull energy. That's how we've been fortunate enough to do 120 events on almost purely volunteer energy with limited resources. People have full jobs and they're stressed and other things, but they show up because like gravity and slope, it draws energy. And so one of the biggest things to me is we have to personalize this. Again, it's our story. You read the design manual, start to understand these principles and these core strategies and getting these pieces, but how does that become functional in our life? When we move through the day and we're walking down the street, you know, you're not just, what were those 14 design principles I learned or those 12 strategies? How do we create a relationship? Now, anytime I go through, I always see things moving in the landscape. Creativity and hope, creativity and hope. Gravity and slope, creativity and hope. And so, you know, Fritjof Capra, tying it to the relationship, author Fritjof Capra boiled billions of years of evolutionary wisdom into a word and a sentence. Ecology is the science of relationships, and that nature sustains the web of life by creating and nurturing communities. And so we all know how to care for community. and relationships. How do we relate with these tools, these principles? And again, back to earlier what I was saying about our imagination and emotions being so powerful, and that our environment and our perception shapes us. So you see this amazing thing going on in nature, and you start to recognize the pattern at play, and then to create an emotional connection to that, to the billions of years of evolutionary wisdom, is such a powerful and rare gift to ourselves. And then as we do that, we're more empowered to really study the permaculture and apply it in our lives. And to take this, because this I'm just kind of meandering around. Like I said, I'm more focused on the field tonight and talk about principles, but it is a brilliant ecological design system, and permaculture and versions of it is what is most badly needed across the planet. When you look at what I see as the four key areas that a framework for understanding where we're at, okay, we have a lot of problems, the symptoms, then we have a lot of great solutions. Organic gardening, organic farming, green building, natural building, permaculture, all these solutions. And then we have the system. We could implement our individual solutions, but we have economic globalization to deal with. Our government, this macroeconomic system that is spending hundreds of billions of subsidized dollars a year to destroy the planet on which we depend and each other. And so symptoms, solutions, but then system. We got to apply the solutions to the system scale. And then the fourth S is spirit. A consciousness shift, I think, is the greatest thing that we have to experience. The feeling, what does it feel like to be in healthy relation? And so, you know, those four pieces, but permaculture, the beauty of permaculture as an ecological design system that teaches eco-literacy, our understanding of how over billions of years ecosystems have evolved to sustain the web of life, and eco-design to design the flow of energy through our lives in a way that's ecologically sound. So permaculture as an ecological design science that has eco-literacy and eco-design, it applies to the symptoms. It's like you look at all these macro problems like, oh yeah, that applies here. The solutions, oh yeah, those are all part of permaculture. It's definitely about systemic change. And then the other part that, again, I said is more of my focus with this is the personal applications, our personal ecology, our story, how we use this relation with the environment to not just design beautiful, lush gardens and communities, but for that consciousness transformation. And it really is, like the lens that permaculture provides for that is really astounding. And so now, I've talked so much, I'd love to do some movement with you guys. The Tai Chi of permaculture. So if you could all get your feet parallel. And so if you just think about the fact that permaculture is looking at billions of years of evolutionary wisdom and creating design upon that wisdom, that's what Tai Chi and the internal martial arts and a lot of movement systems have done is, you know, they modeled after birds and animals initially. And so it's really some of the same stuff. Permaculture is Tai Chi for the planet, and Tai Chi is permaculture for your body. If you even look at the yin and yang symbol, what does nature do when it runs into each other, when things are moving at different paces? Like in a river, you see those little spirals occurring. When they're moving at different flows, they wrap. You know, and so, and Tai Chi is a lot about, it's not going head to head. It's wrapping and flowing. And you look, there's the little black dot in the center of the white yin and a little white dot in the center of the other one. It's also, you know, the essence of each is in the whole of the other. And then you look at hurricane. Spirals can be destructive. When you get that cold and hot mixing in the wrong way, it could wreak insane havoc. And so I studied a lot of Tai Chi and used to teach it. And having that background and starting to study permaculture, I'm like, oh my God, this is some of the same stuff. And the biggest plug I can make tonight is to, you probably already have, some of you, but having a movement practice, like to me, this is just the absolute core necessity. Is we'll do a little routine, and I do a larger version of it every day. And you have the time to, first principle, observe and interact, to recognize pattern, to get still inside, to just really come into healthy relation. And so having some sort of movement practice and to really work the imagination and emotions of it, to do stretches and then to release what we're vexed with, and then also to set an intention about all that we're blessed with, and to really just show ourselves that every day and to feel the felt and purposeful power of it. And so first, to, if you could all do a little hand rub, and just listen to everybody's hands moving together. And that our collective resonance is so much powerful than our individual resonance. And we're cultivating that imaginal and emotional fertility as well. Just feel an intent charging. Now that your hands are getting charged up, give a little shake. And just feel, shake off any stuck spots. Loosen up. And so to heal ourselves and each other and the sweet Earth Mother and all her lovely watersheds, we first have to go to the source of our issues and release the limiting beliefs mudding the waters in our heads, our head waters. And so I want everybody to just do a vigorous but gentle head rub. And as you're rubbing your head, feel the connection between your elbows. And then feel your arms moving from down into your ribs, the relationship of your arms moving together. And then close your eyes and gently put your hands at your side. Take a deep breath. Just release any limiting beliefs, fear, apathy, overwhelm. The idea that any of us are never not enough as we are. And as you let that release, just marinate on these words, that life is measured not by the number of breaths we take, but by the moments which take our breath away. And then gently open your eyes. So now we're going to charge up our index fingers. So pick either one. And again, just feeling the intent drawn. And you don't even have to know how it gets in there, but that this whole room full of people and all their wisdom and soul is able to charge that finger up too. And all the folks rocking it all over the place right now. All the designs in place. Not even anybody functioning. They're just sailing themselves. Food growing, water getting caught. All going in there. And again, using your imagination, your emotions, feel a sense of something moving down your spine. And as you do that, feel your arms just gently float up along with your spirit. And then you want to rub some gentle circles around your eyes. Picture being such a deep and vast sea of reverence that anything which is not just dissolves and melts away as if it never existed. And that vision, you know, as we rub our eyes, vision isn't seeing things as they are, but it's to be so damn entranced with the world being born that we cannot help but move from inspired action. And so before you open your eyes, put your hands at your side for a second and then keep your eyes closed. And just recognize that in our brain we have this little chemical factory producing neuropeptides. and just like wearing a pathway in your life, in a garden, anywhere, we could, by reproducing and feeling certain emotions, we produce those chemicals more frequently, and we wear a pathway, they get easier to produce. If you're producing fear regularly or lack, that gets easy to produce by your body. If it's awestruck wonder, boundless hope, that gets easier to produce. And so before you open your eyes, just picture something that lights you up. It can be a person, a scent, a song. Whatever makes you feel amazing and whole. See what that feels like moving through your body. The tasty chemical stew that you just created. And then when you're ready, gently open your eyes. So, you know, as far as teeny practices, as part of this practice, there's all kinds of other amazing things you can weave in, but one of my favorite parts to add to this, if you just take a minute in the middle of the day, in the morning, whenever, so if you're doing that little eye exercise and just getting still, if you have to make an important decision, you know, when we get still, we could hear truth more clearly, and we know what our next act is. And so after I do that, I get this thought of... I kind of pulse in and out. So first you pulse out to this awestruck wonder of a long, amazing view, mountaintop high, something that gives you this boundless feel. And then we'll do it at the end of tonight. And then I draw into a very kind of living vividly and rhythmic validity, just a powerful focus that draws all your energy in. So it goes out and then it goes in. And then pulse out again, more just a dissolving of like, I cannot believe this is all me. And it's that idea that it's so hard to remember that. We forget it constantly if people ever know it. But there is no separation. You know, and so just, I find the practice of doing that every day and often, just taking a second, feeling that gratitude of, holy smokes. You know, rather than just even think how much better, as you look at an amazing view or you see something or a great song or whatever stokes you, and you're thinking, wow, that's such a beautiful mountaintop. Oh, you are such an amazing artist. Wow, that... You know, we put it out there, and it's like, holy smokes, I cannot believe that is all me, all of us. And so as a practice, it's really nice to internalize some of it. And so another really important one, you know, our limiting beliefs are open, and we got some vision, is that to we're going to do something called cloud hands, which is directly from a Tai Chi practice. And again, using imagination and motion, do you want to feel like your arms moving through honey? And so without taking out the person next to you, we're going to just gently do a small circle. And feel like you're reaching down into the earth, and you're drawing up from the earth, and you're smoothing across your thyroid, your throat area. And just feel, see if you can get a sense, a viscous sense of your arm moving. So many opportunities to cultivate our imagination and our emotion to create new connections. You know, it's our world. We could design it any way we want. How do we want to feel and relate? And so you just smoothen the energy across your thyroid. And I always think of this too as like we need to speak strong and loud truths, but also inviting truths. And so how do we give rise to our voice through our actions, through our words, whatever we do? Because we all have challenges when we go back to our life. How to share this stuff. You know, so thinking, giving rise to our voice. And then do a little tap on your chest. And your thymus gland is under here, which is an important part of our immunity. We really need a vital immune response. And ecological design is definitely an immune system. And also, you know, I just think of honey in the heart. You know, having honey in your heart. And a little bit of lymph. You gotta. That's kind of interesting. You know, just once you start studying permaculture stuff, you start observing patterns. And maybe for a few years of doing this, also like, hold on. I have no clue, you know, but I mean, is that what they're doing? They're stirring up their thymus and their, you know, their lymph, but, you know, the animal world knows what's up. So I don't know. Just a question. In permaculture, usually have more answers than questions, or more questions than answers. You learn one thing and you got 10 questions behind it. And so your kidneys are the next part. And in traditional Chinese medicine, fear is the emotion associated with your kidneys. And Joanna Macy has some amazing words about fear, which I was using today from event to event, is that fear is just inspiration that forgot to breathe. So, always good to take some breath and move the energy. And then the last one is a good one. This one got altered today too by the group interaction. So you have this little thing right here called a sacrum. It has three holes on each side. And so when we're taking in a lot of energy, a lot of brain energy, a lot of emotional energy, whatever, and you just think you have extra storage capacity in your sacrum. And so a techie came on one of the tours one time, and I was doing this, talking about that, and he's like, oh, you're megabots! You know, the computer, I'm like, oh, yeah! So we've been, but then today we were on the tour, and we were kind of doing a little movement. We start all our tours with this movement set. It's powerful. It gets you open and aware to receive information through your senses and your mind, but also it really helps connect into our collective energy. It helps connect us. And so this one guy said, it's your gigabots. And I'm thinking, you know, he's right, because when you look at the true map of where we're at as a species and a planet, it's like, we do need that extra order of everything, you know? And so we got gigabots. Remember that. And you can do, you know, and you go through, you kind of just go through your body systems and your senses and create story around. You know, when you're rubbing your ears, that inner sound has an even more powerful effect than outer sound on our health and peace. And reminder to listen to our intuition and to speak our truth and to have vision and to open up our beliefs. So you're stretching your body, you're releasing, you know, stuck emotions and energy. You're drawing in good energy. You're cultivating the emotions you want. Wherever you're at, you're usually able to connect into the environment. I'm watching what's going on with the birds in the backyard and where the trees are at in their cycle, and you're breathing the air and feeling the difference, whether it's humid or foggy, or, you know, you're just relating in your senses. And since the first principle of permaculture is about observation, interaction, a movement practice to get into your senses to relate is vital. And that's how we take in our perception through our senses. And so if we're shaped by our perception and environment, and our imagination, our emotions that are so powerful, color our perception, you know, as our personal design, to have a place to land and to embody it, you know, take in the knowledge and experience of things, but then a daily routine of some sort to really, to bring it into order. And not just in permaculture, one of the, John Young, who's an amazing wilderness awareness teacher and naturalist, who now is working with permaculture folks, they're blending a wilderness awareness curriculum with the ecological design curriculum. They go perfectly together. And their core, he's founded over 70 wilderness awareness schools in like the last 15 years. He's amazing. But his core practice is a sit spot, I learned after several years. And so you look at a lot of different systems, Zen Buddhism, the Zazen, or their morning practice. And so it's really vital for, especially in such a busy culture, to take the time and let this stuff settle. It doesn't matter how much great knowledge or experience or whatever we take in, what helps us uptake and apply it to relate with it emotionally and to make an actual plan with measurable results of how we're gonna make it happen. And so movement is a really vital piece for that. I think I just can't recommend enough, even if you only have 2 minutes, 20 minutes, whatever. And you could apply this anywhere. You know, do Tao Chi Gong. You could do this same set in 2 minutes when you get out of the shower with your Tao. You're charged up and you're just resetting your intent. And so just to touch on a larger framework, since there's some various people are from different scales of things here. I'm going to talk a little bit about sustainability in general. But before that, I said reverence several times. And in my morning practice, I have this amazing book called 365 Tao. It's this daily meditation. And the author has this definition of reverence that I really like. He says it's to, with steadfast determination, make something of the materials in the moment. And to me, that's what permaculture is. Reverence is the why. It's not just having a cool, eco-groovy garden. We definitely got to meet our needs. But if you think about to make something of the materials in the moment. So, you know, there's lots of different scales and contexts going on. Part of our moment is this global ecosystem decline, heavy situation we're facing. And then another part of it, that's out the macro and the micro, is like, where are we at in our moment? And so, and the materials, to understand how 4 billion years of evolutionary wisdom brings materials into a divine order called life, that's a pretty amazing gift. And so, you know, making something of materials in the moment, a way to understand our macro issues, a way to sense and connect with where we're at, and how that relates to the big scale, and then a toolkit and set of people and relationships that enable us to move through that and to be living vividly in rhythmic validity and creating lush, vibrant lives, gardens, ecosystems, you know. And so it's a really vital piece. So reverence is at, in my mind, is at the heart of it. It's a thing we could all do no matter how much permaculture knowledge we have, to be in healthy relationship and ask a lot of questions. And so as far as sustainability goes, it was originally defined as the ability of humans to meet our needs without impairing the ability of future generations to do so. But that's not really a functional definition. You can't do much with that. It sounds nice, but what does it really mean? And so author Fritjof Capra gave one that I liked. He talked about you need two core elements for sustainability to happen. You need eco-literacy and eco-design, which I touched on earlier. The ecological understanding and of how do we actually use this in a design way to change our lives and communities. You know, so those are two really core elements, and pulling it back to relationship and community. And then as part of, you know, cycles are one of the core patterns in nature as well. Things function in cycles on this planet. The nutrient cycle of salmon returning upstream to then have their young to die and have the hundreds of millions of pounds until recently of flesh feed the soil and feed the trees and feed the grizzly bears. That's a nutrient cycle, hydrologic cycle. Recycling, when it goes from plastic to pavement to out the door, two times is not a cycle. That's really downcycling. You know, hydrologic, something that cycles forever, is recycling. And so in terms of understanding cycles, you think about sustainability. What do we need to sustain? Our ability to sustain cycles. And for me, then again, to sustain cycles in spirit, because if we're the ones doing it, I don't know, we got to have a good connection to it. It's got to feel good. And so, you know, just thinking in terms, even if we don't understand it, eco-literacy and eco-design, relationships, reverence at the center is a thing that makes sense. And so a way of how we could all apply this in our daily lives right now when we walk out the door is again, imagination and emotions and cultivating the felt and purposeful power of each of our daily actions. And so I think there are two really vital pieces. We have to radically conserve and, you know, reduce our carbon emission by like 70%. Is what the scientists are saying. And so there's all kinds of simple daily actions, compact fluorescent light bulbs, recycled toilet paper, a lot of things we could all do. They're not necessarily ecological design, so ideally each of us, we're doing the simple daily actions, buying local, buying organic. As we learn, we're doing all these great things, but then we're also recognizing that we really need this ecological design as a bigger shift. And so they don't have to be mutually exclusive. You could explain this within permaculture pretty easily. But they're, you know, sort of seem like two different pieces. There's the simple daily actions that we do, and then there's the ecological framework of reorienting our lives. And so as far as the simple daily actions go, so what happens tomorrow? You know, you wake up and you roll out of bed and you're kind of tired and groggy and you go into the bathroom and you hopefully you don't turn on the water until you lube up your toothbrush and you only turn it on when you get a little wet, and you turn it off, you know, conserving that energy. And then you're sitting there, and you're brushing your teeth, and you're kind of tired. And are you using a virgin petrochemical toothbrush that wherever it came from, it's polluting a community, and wherever it goes to, linear throwaway, where is a way in a cyclic existence? There is no way. There's nothing we could throw anything away. And so, you know, what's going on there? All those little actions. And so, or this, I don't work for the company, I get no profits from them, but the preserved toothbrush, just as an example, tapping that sort of permaculture wisdom, the wisdom of our cyclic existence. It came from recycled yogurt container, or came from yogurt containers. So its beginnings are in recycled materials. And then they give you an envelope with a stamp on it. They say, here, after you're done with your toothbrush, don't throw it away. Send it back to us. And they turn it into recycled material decking. That's pretty cool. You're just brushing your teeth. So there's the aspect of the double the power of, I'm no longer doing this negative thing, and now I'm doing this amazing thing. You know, and then there's that extra understanding of, well, yeah, it's a recycled toothbrush, but then you're starting to understand eco-design. You're like, cradle to cradle, the wisdom of our cyclic existence. It's in your toothbrush. You're just brushing your teeth. You know, so then there's that, starting to relate with that. And then there's the other part, sort of the Tai Chi part, our imagination, emotions, most powerful things we have. How many people are doing amazing things already, and no matter what, it's never enough? Because ecosystems are still going down, we still have Bush and government and all this, and it's easy for us to get caught up in that. I bet everybody here is doing really great things, but it's easy to be like, oh yeah, sure, I buy fair trade, sure, I buy organic, but what's the next thing that's not enough? It's always the next thing that's not enough. You know, and so reclaiming the power of what the choices we're already making, they're good. Are you inspired by that? Are you empowered? Are we emotionally fed? You know, so for even the converted, I think we could all take that a little deeper. And then that enables us to do the other grandiose things. But how do you feel about brushing your teeth? You know, it's so amazing. And so then you brush your teeth and you look up and you're thinking, the light's on. And, you know, maybe you're off the grid and living out in the woods and that could be good and you're getting your energy from the sun. But maybe you're just in town and at the very least you have a compact fluorescent light bulb, which isn't perfect. It has toxic chemicals in there and, you know, it's a step along the way. But for every one of these we install, saves 1 to 2,000 pounds of carbon emissions. If every household in the U.S. replaced 5 high-use compact fluorescents, we'd save 1 trillion pounds of carbon emissions. With global warming, the biggest thing we're facing, a lot of big things we're facing, but that's a simple act. A simple act that we could do and feel the power of, and a simple act that could scale out. You know, and then you're going to the bathroom and you have, you know, there's the Tai Chi movement and there's just the morning movement. And, you know, do you have recycled booty libations? Because the trees are the lungs of the earth and under no condition do our lungs belong in our booty. And so there's, you know, and the trees sequester the carbon. So there's also that powerful factoid of, you would not believe what, I'll read a few of them just on toilet paper. If every household in the U.S. replaced just 1 4-pack of virgin fiber toilet paper with 100% recycled, we'd save 1.2 million trees, 537 million gallons of water, 5 million pounds of cubic landfill space. Simple acts amplified. That's what's going on in our world right now, and that's what we just need to change. You know? And then you go into your room, maybe, and, you know, I think there's no guilt if, you know, a lot of times because we're doing good work or whatever, or we can't afford to buy all the super organic and the really expensive organic clothes and that. We can't feel bad about that. We just do what we can. Reduce, reuse. Not just the green hyper-consumptive lifestyle. But when we can buy something new, when we can upgrade, you know, are you just slipping on your sweatshop shoes? Or, you know, maybe a pair of black spot shoes made with organic hemp uppers and a sole full of recycled rubber for the divine touch of a life lover every time you slip your toes into these. You know, boom, emotional connection. And just like those patterns, just like observing the patterns that function in life, simple things done repeatedly. Effectiveness and patterns are simple things done repeatedly. And so pattern and emotional connection to your shoes and your toothbrush, one at a time. And you're getting dressed in your fair trade clothes and all that. You haven't even stepped out of the house yet, you know. It's like permaculture is great and grand and these big eco things, but just our basics. You know, and already you're thinking, Superman's blue tights don't have nothing on living lives of conscious might. You know, you're feeling good about it. It's not perfect. You understand. We understand that. You know, what's a toothbrush stand up to, you know, the Amazon potentially going to Savannah and desertifying in the near future and taking out climate on the whole planet for humanity? But still, it's what we could do. And it does lead to more. You know, because when you have that power, you take it farther. And then there's the sharing aspect. And so maybe, you know, you're now all charged up, you're brushing your teeth, and you got your toilet paper and your light bulbs, and you're walking out the door, and sure, there was a lawn there, or maybe some concrete, your driveway that you depaved and now has strawberries growing under where the tires are. And now it's this just permified, polycultural paradise of a front yard producing food, medicine, habitat, and wonder. And so then the sharing factor, you know, we walk over to our neighbor, and you knock on your neighbor George's door and say, "Good morning, neighbor George. I'm not sure if you saw the recent global warming cover of Time magazine or Al Gore's new documentary, but these are powerful times that we're living in. And the fact that every choice we make matters. And so, George, I've brought a soft and illuminating gift for you." You know, so humor and sharing with each other, getting past the fear, and maybe George will slam the door the first time, but maybe Sue next door won't. And, you know, so also feeling the power of our little daily actions, which is really what we try and do in Daily Acts. It's highlighting the brilliant ecological leaders and growing them and teaching courses. But then it's all the little stuff that slips by unnoticed. And that's what good design does, right? It's using every ounce of the energy before it leaves the system. Something triggers us emotionally, limiting belief. Don't let it go. Don't block it out. Work with it. Tune it. Learn from it. You know, just using all the energy, all the water, all the plant space, just having that fertility growing in our lives and all of our daily choices is really vital. And that's something we could all do. You know, and the beauty of these ecological design eyes is that, again, you go out the door, and it's still an overload. It's still then suddenly, you know, it's more confusing in some ways. But you got great people you're working with. You know, you're all the time getting a little more closer to on path, on purpose. You're just appreciating what you do more. I think that's one of the biggest things, is taking it all deeper. There's things I've been doing for years in our gardens that I've used. When I didn't know how to compost, I would just bury things in the soil in a hole because I couldn't put it in the garbage anymore. I didn't know how to do anything, but then maybe a year or two later, you actually make a pile that you still don't know what to do with it. And then maybe you get a worm bin, and you're actually in relation with that renewable resource, the horse, the sun, the worms, the bees. And then maybe, you know, it took me another year or two to figure out that it's a recycled plastic bin, so I cut a hole in the bottom and catch that rich liquid, and then take a tablespoon of it and put it in 5 gallons of water, you know, like a 100-to-1 dilution. And then you're taking this microbially rich tea and you're putting it all over your soil and your whatever. And so, you know, it's all the things we're already doing, just walking away and be like, how could I better understand this and appreciate it and share it to articulate it with someone else, you know? And so that's a really vital one as well. And so just to wrap up, there's because I want to leave some time for us just to chat and connect and just to let people talk, like John was saying, to find out who's here, because I know everybody here is doing great things. And if you have questions, more than happy to answer them. But one thing before I do that. As far as the personal design aspect, I just want to touch on some key points on that. So where I'm at with that I think is really vital is insane amounts of knowledge coming and going. And I'll look for patterns in the knowledge and be really clear about what we take in. And if we're going to take it in, to make sure we're going to use it. It's not just wasting our energy and filling our space, cluttering our mind. And so how do we organize the knowledge we take in and really get diligent about applying it? You think about cycles, nature cycles. I'm a person who gets excited about a lot of things. Follow through is always a challenge. So I think in terms of sacred follow through of your day, of your week, of your season, feedback loops. Where am I at? What's not making the cut? What vital aspects of my life are getting starved because I'm working on these other ones? Not guilting ourselves, but to really get meticulous and diligent about like closing our loops in our lives. And so we track everything now just to get a sense. I feel pretty good about not using a lot of garbage, but it feels better to know, okay, 5 pounds a month, whatever amount of garbage, the amount of gray water we put out. So we've created a little home system to track all the food that we harvest in the garden. Liquid gold, we're running out of fossil fuels. Natural gas is a fossil fuel. Farmers get nitrogen from it. It's a main expensive input that's costing farmers a lot of money. They're already struggling. 18% nitrogen every time you pee, approximately. Pure, beautiful liquid gold and amazing fertilizer diluted 5 to 1. And so how do we close that feedback loop? You know, so just getting aware of our energy flows of our lives. So that's where I've been taking a lot the last year, is just taking it all deeper and really stepping back and looking at the design. What do the bees mean now that they're in the system? The worms, the food inputs, the food outputs, the pile of magazines sitting there. What's that pattern? What am I not getting to? Is it important? And so just thinking in terms of the personal design aspect, I think is really vital. And just taking it all deeper. And the tracking, I think, is an important thing. It's not for everybody, but we need to produce replicable models with real measurements. That's one of the main things that David Holmgren talked about. They have their design really well mapped out, the co-originator permaculture. And a lot of times we'll do great things, but okay, well, how much food did you really produce? How much waste did you, you know, to really, even if we're not numbers people, to try and orient towards that, because we're at a phase in humanity, we can't just think we're all environmentalists. We actually need to know the very specific and tangible numbers of how are we showing up? And is it producing the results that we need to be producing right now if we want the human experiment to continue? And so so there's just that plug. But now this is so foxtail pine is an amazing tree. When I was speaking earlier in movement, I was talking about how going out to the macro and then drawing in. And so there's this tree. Do any of you know the foxtail pine? It's this tree in the Sierras. And it only grows like above 9,000 feet or so. It grows really high up in this very extreme environment. And it's amazing. The first time I saw one, I couldn't even believe it. You know, everything else up there looks like old growth broccoli. It's so shriveled. It's like insanely cold weather, you know, just the most harshest of climates. And somehow this tree is like, you know, 30, 20 feet around and 60 feet tall, and just manifest. You could just feel it just manifesting divine force somehow out of the environment. I don't even know how. Way above where anything else is. Nothing else is really in the range. And it's so powerful. And so I bring foxtail pine into my meditation. So I like everybody just to close your eyes. And even if you you could pick something else if that one doesn't stick, but picture, you know, that at 9,000 plus feet in this very harsh environment, this amazing and majestic tree that is somehow able to just manifest amazing size and beauty and hold space, again, just out of the harshest conditions. And just see what that feels like. And so thinking about those foxtail pines, picture what it feels like to lead a foxtail life, to where you're moving through your day, the challenges, the opportunities, whatever you come across, just reverently and powerfully feeling it come into a divine order. Take a deep breath. Your struggles, your work, your garden, your dreams and passions. Just that feel of divine and fortified order. Gently open your eyes. Can anybody what were some of the senses you got? If you did, it doesn't have to be that. I'm just curious if anybody, is there any emotions that got stirred up? Anything you thought? Anyway. Nice. Do you think that's doable? Do you think we could get a sense of, no matter, we're going to walk out, we have all the same challenges tomorrow. You gain some more knowledge or take a course and you still got those challenges. They get greater because you understand what's really going on better. But that feel of just like powerfully being in rhythm with the forces of nature. Could you see how we could have more of that in our lives and culture? So, last closing thing, just to send it out. So now that we rubbed up lots of intent, we want to give some love to the sweet Earth Mother. So go ahead and down through the carpet, down through the cement. And then up to the Father Sky. The age of the patriarchy is going down, but we still got to love the Papa. And then to your relations, your peoples. And then, of course, you must turn it in. So thank you all for coming and listening to me meander and ramble about for an hour and a half. And then if we could open it up and